You're listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
All right, to Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio is on his way. We're staying for a few minutes, and we're leading off with instant trivia. Hope you're ready.
Oh, I wasn't supposed to look at Twitter.
It's fine.
All I saw was the new Saints uniforms.
Right. You said there's new Saints uniforms, and I'm ready to see those, and I haven't seen those yet, so I need to...
So this is in addition to they announced a white helmet last week. The Saints are now going to wear a gold uniform with a black helmet and then the gold logo in the middle of it.
All right,
I like it.
I got to find it.
It looks good.
Who tweeted it that you saw?
The Saints.
You follow the Saints?
Someone retweeted them.
Okay, because I don't follow the Saints.
The New Orleans Saints. You don't follow the NFL teams?
No.
I don't either. The Bills would be the only account. I always feel that if the team accounts tweet something I need to see, that every NFL insider in the world is going to retweet them and I'll see them.
Right. Okay, so your instant trivia is this.
Mm-hmm.
There are three defensive ends, pass rushers, ever. Three players ever in NFL history with back-to-back seasons of 17 and a half sacks or more. Three ever. Who are they?
Three ever with back-to-back seasons of 17 and a half.
Yes.
Hendrickson.
Correct. That's how this comes up. Warren Sharp tweeting about Hendrickson. The Trey Hendrickson, who is driven to Florida rather than attend Bengals camp.
Yep.
35 sacks last 2 years. No other Bengal has more than eight. Hendrickson's sack rate is 3.8%. The rest of the Cincinnati defense is 1%. Less than 1%.
Wow.
His pressure rate is 17.5%. No other Bengal is at higher than 10%. So the other two players to have back-to-back seasons of 17 and a half sacks, there are only two others to ever do it.
Did Michael Strahan do it? He had the record, and then did he, like, around either before or after that one?
No. He did not.
Okay. Did Reggie White do it?
Yes. Reggie White is correct.
I feel like he could have done it multiple times.
Reggie White and?
Bruce?
No.
No? Reggie White, by the way, had 3 years in a row with 18 or more sacks.
Okay, I'm watching this video because the Saints did indeed.
It's like a video release.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what they look like?
What?
It's not the kind of gold I thought it would be. They look like Purdue.
Okay.
I thought the gold would be a little different. They look like Purdue.
Purdue.
Or maybe does Army sometimes wear this setup too?
Yeah.
They look like Purdue and they look like Army. I like them. I think they're good.
Yeah, they're very
good. And the helmets. These black helmets they're wearing are really nice.
You notice like they have like a texture at the top, kind of. It's not a stripe, but it's like the dots or whatever.
It's not quite houndstooth. I don't know what it is, but it's nice. I think the Saints' new uniform setup is really nice. All right, anyway. The other player?
Top pass rushers of all time. What about... like Dwight Freeney?
No.
Lawrence Taylor?
No. Reggie White, Trey Hendrickson, and blank. Back-to-back seasons with 17 and a half sacks.
Aaron Donald?
No.
He had 22 one year.
I think you're going to be mad at yourself.
For not getting this?
Yeah, I think so.
He's a Hall of Famer?
Not yet.
Ooh, good. Not yet. TJ Watt?
Yes.
Yeah.
T.J. Watt, one of the best defensive players.
How happy is Andrew Filippone that I said T.J. Watt before Myles Garrett? Said T.J. Watt.
No, sorry, wrong.
Wait, what? What do you mean?
It was not T.J. Watt.
J.J. Watt.
Yes, J.J. Watt. Sorry.
Okay. One letter off.
I jumped on it. It's J.J. Watt, not T.J. Watt. J.J. Watt.
Okay. Yeah, he went 20.5 and then 17.5.
Yeah.
The 20.5 years of the year, he finished second in MVP voting, despite the fact that he had 20 and a half sacks, an interception return for a touchdown off E.J. Manuel, 5 receiving touchdowns on offense.
He did not have 5 receiving touchdowns on offense.
Yes, he did.
No, he did not.
Yes,
that
he
didn't
did.
Happen. Those were all pick sixes.
Oh, wait a minute. He had a fumble. He had 5 touchdowns total. He had a receiving touchdown. He had a pick six for a touchdown. He had a fumble return for a touchdown. He had 3 receiving touchdowns on offense. No. He did have 3. But yeah, not 5.
Tom Pelissero reports this morning, as the Bills report to camp, sources say 2-time Pro Bowl running back James Cook will be there, though it remains to be seen how involved he'll be on the field.
Okay.
There you go. So Cook will be there.
Tom Pelissero reports a confirmation of a wonder that we already kind of had.
Yeah, a little bit.
Although it's a guarantee he'll be there. But we knew that. He said he would be there. So it would have been very strange. He would have gone back on that, on his word on that, if he would have not shown up.
I'm still looking at the Saints. The Saints uniforms look great.
The top of the helmet really is really
the helmet
sharp.
Is the star of the show.
They're not dots, actually, though. They're the logo.
Right. The helmet is beautiful. The helmet is great.
Yeah.
It's a thick, like a band, that goes from the top of the helmet over the top of it vertically, I guess. And instead of dots, they're little fleur-de-lis, and it is perfect.
Yeah.
It's a great helmet.
Yeah. You know what's funny? We're hanging out a couple extra minutes here, and like the Bills are just waiting to hit publish until we're done off the air. It's like we stayed on air past 10:02, like, oh, we're going to be here for it. Nope. Still nothing.
No.
Although Pete Quelly's picture is pretty definitive. There's going to be a red helmet, I think.
Sure looks like that way. Ian Rappaport quote tweets Tom Pelissero and says, a potential hold-in candidate. Which, here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do these NFL insiders think it is really possible, or are they just kind of acknowledging this is something we'll know within the next 24 hours? Should your antenna be up any further? Hey, Pelissero said it remains to be seen, and then Rappaport said he is a hold-in candidate.
I don't think this takes it any further than it already was.
Okay.
I'm in the same position. It could happen, but I'm not, my antenna's not up, really, for that. I mean, really, haven't the Bills kind of proved to him that they don't really feel the need to pay him what he wants?
Well,
what is he holding in for?
That we can't.
He's holding in to get them to $15 million as if he thinks the Bills are going to be more likely to give him $15
million? No, we can't know that. He might hold in to try to get them to 12 because they're at 9 and he would take 12. You know, just we can't treat the tweet and the lack of contract as the only two pieces of the negotiation just because the rest of it we don't know. Maybe he'd hold in to say, maybe there's an offer on the table for 2 years and 24. And he wants 3 years and 36 or 3 years 30 guaranteed. You know, we always paint these contract disputes as they don't want to pay him and he wants a lot. And the reality is that, like, I wish we could know that. What's the smallest amount of money a team and a player have ever split over? $572,000 and the guy hits the market. You know what I mean?
I mean, look at the Bengals Shamar Stewart thing right now and the littlest little thing that's keeping him off all their OTA stuff and minicamp and now training camp.
The best example I can think of this is the Sabres and Tim Kennedy. Remember that? Seriously, like Tim Kennedy, the Sabres would have had an offer. He went to arbitration. He won, then they walked away.
They bought him out.
Or whatever it was. But
No. He went to arbitration. He got a good deal maybe for what he was looking for, and then the Sabres bought him out.
And it was over.
Yeah.
And that was not over a large amount of money, and it wasn't that they were unwilling to pay him at all. It was just they weren't going to go to a number, and he wanted that number, and then it kind of forced the situation. So in the case of Cook, could he hold in? Again, they're saying he's a candidate to do so. And if he does, he would be asked about it. That's the kind of thing where a player doesn't ever do that. They don't say what the numbers are. Imagine Cook just saying, like, yeah, I mean, I tweeted 15. I'd take 12. Their offer is 9.2.
Right.
You could just say all that. I feel like it would go over pretty poorly.
The team might not be happy.
You would certainly
about that.
Anger the team, but that information we don't have it, and it's in the realm of possibility. I'm not telling you that I know it, just that I can't treat it like 15 is the only number he would ever take.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the Hard Knocks piece of it, which Would he get featured if he's holding in?
Yes.
For sure?
Not only would he get featured, coaches would be asked about it. The most high-profile holdout I can remember on Hard Knocks, there have probably been others, but Revis. Revis was holding out. When the Jets were on Hard Knocks, Revis was holding out.
Right.
And I can remember Rex going in to meet the GM. And that's like that was a great look at this. And this kind of gets to the Bengals and Shamar Stewart. I've got the Bengals director of player personnel saying that he thinks Shamar Stewart, he's got a reason to hold out here. Like, he's fine. He's not mad about it. The owner is. And right. Rex, on that Hard Knocks, is in there meeting with a GM. Who would that have been at the time? Like, Mike McCagney? Is that a person?
That sounds... Or it was Jeff Ireland? Remember him? That's the Dolphins.
Mike McCagnan?
That sounds familiar.
Sal, come on in. Is Mike McCagnan a person? Is that a former Jets GM? Am I making that up? What was his name?
It's got to be.
It's close.
McCagnan sounds familiar.
Yeah, Mike McCagnan. Okay, 2015, 2018. That's right.
Look at you knowing.
That's a guy. Mike
knowing
McCagnan.
Jets GMs.
Huh?
Isn't he the GM now?
Did he get the job back from Joe Douglas? Joe Douglas was the guy who got fired. Who's the GM?
Right. Who's the GM now?
Darren Moogie.
Okay.
Moogie, that's right. M. Yeah. He came from Denver.
So anyway, what I'm getting at is...
McCagnan was the guy before that.
The best thing I ever saw, the best contract looking on a Hard Knocks was that, was Rex going into Mike McCagnan or whoever and saying, is this done yet? What are we doing? I need this guy. It was, it was a look at a front office kind of bickering within its own ranks of a coach wants a player. Why isn't it done? Like, Rex is over here like, I don't care about the cap. Get me my guy. So...
Right. I think that most coaches would probably feel that way with a lot of guys, but if it ever comes to a head, and that's the question, and it probably did in that situation. Thanks, guys, for hanging out an extra few minutes here. I had a bit of a technical issue over at Studio Capaccio, so I had to come in, and it took me a minute, and ready to rock and roll. We got Eric Wood at 10:30 coming up here after a timeout. You know, start a camp, what it's like. I was on Eric's podcast this morning, actually recorded, but we'll do that. Matt Perino at 11, and Pat Hammer at 11:30 on what the weather's going to be like for anybody going out to Fisher.
Very good. Chris Brown has it. Mike Tenenbaum was the GM at the time. But I was right that Mike McCagnan is a person.
Yes, you are right about that.
I'm taking credit for that. All right. So, all right, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Coming up next.
All right, very good.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Yeah, Sal Capaccio takes you behind the scenes at training camp. He almost didn't take you anywhere today. Technology is an amazing thing, isn't it? It is awesome. Remember yesterday we had the discussion, Josh, about Kathy, who went on the Italy trip with me, and she has no cell phone. She's never had one. She's 70-something years old. She's not on the internet. And we're like, that is mad love respect to Kathy, right? I'm like, that would have been like good today because I realized I need my phone and this bit of technology on the phone to hook up to you in the production room to put me on the air. And yesterday, there was an issue with it, and I totally forgot about that. So I'm at home today. I'm like, wait a minute. I can't do the show the way I normally do. I got to go to the station. By then, it was already 9:45. So I called you. You're like, hey, I'll get the guys to stick around. So I appreciate that. Thanks for the assist here.
It's funny. I was sitting here from like 9 to 9:30, and I'm like, wow, Sal's usually here by now. I wonder what's going on. I hope everything's okay. And then
No, my plan was to be home today, get ready for camp, pack my stuff. You know, I got to do some shopping. I still have to go get some here odds and ends. As I've told everybody, I do not camp, I glamp, okay? I have my coffee maker I bring into the dorm, okay? I'm ready to rock and roll. I get everything I need, right? There's nothing I don't want for at camp. So today was the day to kind of get all of that ready. So anyway, thank you very much to Jeremy and Joe. These things happen sometimes. We've only gone a few extra minutes here, and they had to stay around a little bit. So you guys aren't getting overtime. I talked to the bosses. You're not getting overtime for staying around for an extra few minutes. I just want you to know that. But maybe I'll buy him a drink or something at St. John Fisher. We're all going to be there tomorrow. Bills training camp starts tomorrow, and we're going to be on the air. They're going to start at 6 a.m. out there in next to Grownie Stadium. I will be with them at 7 a.m. from right there on campus. And then, of course, on the practice field at 9:45. And before that, it'll be Sean McDermott at 9:15 a.m. on at St. John Fisher. So we're going to hear from him. We also will hear tomorrow from Brandon Bean. Brandon Bean is scheduled to talk to the media after practice tomorrow. So we'll hear from Sean McDermott before practice, Brandon Bean after practice. We also know today, or at least we have a report, I should say, today that just came over a little while ago, Tom Pelissero from NFL Network is reporting that James Cook will be at Bills training camp tomorrow. The question is how much he will do once he's at training camp tomorrow. This is, as Ian Rappaport reported, a potential hold-in situation. We've talked about this scenario. Could James Cook show up but not participate? Here's the question I've had about this since we started with this whole James Cook thing and we thought about this possibility with him. How does that end? Like, what if James Cook decides to hold in? The way I know Brandon Bean, the way I know what Brandon Bean operates, he's not going to get strong-armed and to suddenly give him a whole bunch of money because he's panicking. It's not the way Brandon Bean operates. It's just not. So what would the purpose of James Cook's hold in be? I mean, I get the theory behind it, which would be, hey, I'm not going out there and getting injured when I play this position where I take a beating on my body and this is my last year of my contract and I want more money and I want guarantees. This is the way everybody thinks, right? Everybody. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the way football players should think, quite frankly. Any athlete who plays this kind of sport or a, you know, violent sport and has potential for injuries. Everybody wants to get their money and be secure just in case something were to happen and they don't get their money. Okay? I get that from his side. The other side of it is, what is he trying to accomplish with the negotiation part of it, if that's the case? And I don't know if James Cook is going to hold in. Based on what happened at minicamp, he'll be on the field and he'll play. And he'll, I mean, he said, hey, and I had a lot of respect for him when he said, look, I'm here to be with my teammates and it's important for me to be here and win and you want to win a Super Bowl. And I like that. But when I see Ian Rappaport quote tweet Tom Pelissero and write a potential hold-in candidate, well, that gets me thinking, all right, well, let's say he does hold in. How does that end? I can't see Brandon Bean just handing over the bag to James Cook because he's holding in. He's going to say, okay, I'm going to roll with Ray Davis and Ty Johnson. And maybe it moves the needle a little bit because, you know, you do have a little bit of pressure on each side to James Cook wanted to play with his team and Brandon Bean wanting him as a part of the team and Sean McDermott wanting to be on the field. Yeah, I get all that. But how much does it really move the needle from where they may be? I fully believe that the Bills and James Cook have talked about a contract extension. I don't think that this is a situation where the Bills have said, we're not talking because we're not extending you. We don't want you here. One of the things that people ask me about James Cook all the time, the way they phrase it is, well, do you think the Bills, why won't the Bills pay James Cook? Or do they not want to pay him or something like that? I'm like, no, that's not the case. Like, the Bills want James Cook on the team, and I think they want to keep him here long term. They just disagree on what the value of that is. This isn't a scenario where it's all or nothing, and, oh, yeah, we either want to pay him to be here or we just don't want him on the team. It's, yeah, we want you to be here, but it's got to work for us. And what, from Bill's side, what makes sense, the value of this particular player. That's how that works. I think the Bills and James Cook have had conversations based on what Brandon Bean has told us, but he also tells us, you know, he's not going to negotiate through the media. You don't expect him to do that. He doesn't really reveal the details of that. But if you go back to the combine, you go back to the owners' meetings, you go back to anything we've talked with Brandon Bean, OTA's minicamp, about James Cook, there's never been a hint of we haven't communicated. There's never been a hint of we don't want him around. It's always been in some way, shape, or form that they've talked to his representatives. Now, he also kind of made it clear at the owners' meetings that, yeah, we've tabled it because we couldn't get to an agreement, so we pivoted over to Terrell Bernard and Khalil Shakir and Greg Rousseau and Christian Benford, right? Those guys got that's who they focused on because it was clear they weren't going to get something done with James Cook. But by telling us that, he's also telling us we've spoken with them, which tells me they want to sign James Cook. They just disagree on what the value is. How does that end, though? That's what if James Cook holds in, I'm just so curious on what is he trying to accomplish? How does that end? Because you're not going to get Brandon Bean to suddenly just say, oh, yeah, he's not practicing. Give him what he wants. Like, that's not how he operates. It also could be a one-day hold-in if he does it, right? Like, I'm going to make a statement. It's not going to work out today. Not going to be doing these things that just to show that, you know, I want to get paid and to kind of make a headline. I can see that. We'll see where it goes, though. We also have Bills and Sabres, by the way, COO Pete Guelli tweeting a picture of his dorm room very sneakily with the red helmet in there. A red helmet and a bag. I like that. That's a good tease, Pete. That's a great tease. He's got his backpack. He's got his laptop. He's got a few caps. He's got a red helmet sticking out of a bag. You see the top of the red helmet coming out. So that has fueled speculation that the Bills will be wearing a red helmet this year. A guy that wore the red helmet for the Buffalo Bills when he was first drafted by the team as a first rounder. Center and now color analyst in the Buffalo Bills radio network, Eric Wood, joins me on the Wester Hotline to talk about the Bills beginning training camp. I was on Eric's podcast this morning. We'll talk about that in a little while. But Eric, first of all, good morning. Thanks. Good to talk to you again for this time around. I appreciate that and you coming on here. I have to ask you, what do you think about maybe the Bills wearing a red helmet for a game this year?
Yeah, all these rumors are circling. They've kind of made it known that they're going to, you know, potentially pay tribute to the past this season with the final year at Highmark. I would love to see them wear the 90s uniform with the red helmet, the blue jerseys, the white pants. I just think that's an awesome look. I don't think they need to go back to the 2000s red helmet look that we started with through my career with the navy blue mixed in there and all that. I would love to see it. I hear there's rumors where it might be a gray buffalo, a white and gray look. I'm not sure. I would love to see it, but we'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah, for sure. How much did you care about uniforms when you played at the NFL level? Some guys, you want to look great. Of course you do. But was there ever a time where you're like, oh, my God, these are sweet, or yeah, I don't really love these things?
I loved when we made the switch. Now, look, I'm an offensive lineman. I'm not going to look that pretty in a uniform regardless. But I thought the switch back to the classic royal blue, the uniforms we're wearing now, you know, a few years into my career, we switched to those. I thought that was a much better look. We started my career where the stripes on the side didn't even match. I thought those were pretty bad. But honestly, you know, you're putting on an NFL uniform and you're grateful to do it. You're not concerned about it throughout the game, what you look like. You're worried about getting your job done. But I'd say there was, you know, a lot. There's a good amount of people that are concerned what they look like throughout the game as far as uniform goes. And the switch was very welcomed into the locker room. One thing I liked is I always liked wearing white cleats. When I got to the Bills, we had to wear black cleats. I didn't think they looked great with our uniforms. And then Jeff Mazurek made the switch where we could go to the white cleats, which I also thought was a good look.
Before I get to the Bills and training camp, I know that you're out there. You grew up, you know, following the Cincinnati Bengals a bit. You still have friends over there in the Bengals organization. Trey Hendrickson not reporting for the Bengals. That's a report today. How does that hit over there where you live?
Well, it's big news. I mean, he's one of the best defenders in all of football. That's a defense that was terrible last year. They're also one of the worst starting teams in the NFL under Zach Taylor. I believe in his first four seasons, they're 1-7 in their first two games of the season over the last 4 years. I believe that's correct. And, you know, this is a team that's followed that Sean McVay model of training camp where, you know, we're not going to play our starters at all in the preseason. It's kind of 2 days on, 1 day off, as opposed to most teams that are 4 days on, 1 day off. And they just have started the season terribly. And you're starting now training camp without one of your best. And, you know, they paid both those receivers. They paid Joe Burrow. It's hard to have four guys that are near the top of your position, you know, salary-wise. And, look, he's a heck of a ball player. he's done everything right since he's been in Cincinnati. He came in by a free agency, you know, is always available. You know, I'd assume they have to get something done there, but it doesn't look good. And then they also have their first round draft pick holding out right now. And, you know, that Brown family has been notoriously cheap running the Bengals organization. And we'll see how this one shakes out.
Eric Wood on the West Hur Hotline. Bills open training camp tomorrow morning. All right, Eric, take us into a player through the various stages. You were a guy that came in as a first-round pick, a rookie, your first camp, all the way through when you kind of had a few years under your belt till when you became a veteran and went through a few coaching changes. The evolution of a player and what's going through their heads at their different stages, if you can.
Yeah, you know, you come in a rookie and you're just, you know, kind of feeling it out. And then, you know, as your career goes on, you know what to expect with training camp. Maybe the nerves aren't there quite as much heading up to Rochester. And, you know, I always really enjoyed training camp. I thought it was an awesome opportunity to get better. Now, I was never really in a position to get cut. Even when I was heading into contract years, we would always get a contract done. And, you know, I knew I was going to be on the team each year, so I could really just try and hone my craft. But also I had to be really sensitive that there's a – the roster that's not going to be on the team that are fighting for their job each and every day out there. And so try and help the young guys along later in your career. But I always enjoy training camp. Now, the 1 year where we were up there for 5 weeks because our facility was being redone, that was a little extreme. But I was a guy that really enjoyed training camp, looks forward to, you know, kind of connecting with the guys offsite. You hear that from a lot of the players where, you know, a lot of people have families. You know, we don't necessarily live right next to each other during the season. And so training camp's a way that you can come a lot closer as a team. And I always appreciated that we went away. I always loved Rochester. Me and Kyle Williams get our yearly Oak Hill round in right before the start of training camp and get to play a little golf and then hang the sticks up for the rest of the season. Because after that first round of training camp, or right before training camp starts, as an O lineman or a D lineman, your body's not going to feel good enough to play the rest of the year.
What advice would you give any rookie as far as body and preparation before they walk into their first camp at St. John Fisher?
Yeah, you know, nowadays, you know, strength and conditioning is so big, but and they're going to leave, you know, you get a few weeks off over the summer, but you got to keep training. You want to come into training camp in great shape, in great physical shape, as well a condition that you could possibly be, so that you can simply hit the ground running and you're not trying to get your legs under you and trying to play yourself into shape. Old days when there was 8 weeks of training camp, that's when you got into shape. Now you got to come in great shape, and you know the Bills do a little I think that's the start, but it's not much of a test. It's more just, hey, let's get these guys moving, make sure no one's way out of shape where they can go out and injure themselves. And so which I think Alan Branch might be the only person that I've ever seen fail the Bills conditioning test heading into training camp. But my advice would be come in great shape so you don't have to worry about your conditioning level, and then find a couple veterans, see what their daily routine is, take bits and pieces, make it your own routine, and then figure out how they study, how they watch film, and that way you can really kind of progress through your career a little bit quicker.
You had a training camp, you know, with different coaches, different head coaches, different styles, different times of day. I mean, you know, there were more night practice maybe under Chan Gailey. There were more later afternoon practices under Rex Ryan. Sean McDermott likes to do, you know, morning practices. What does a Sean McDermott training camp look like and feel like for a player?
Well, I think it's a little different now because he's really toned it back to be able to maximize their sleep. One of the things that they've kind of leaned into on their research is, you know, instead of keeping us up till 10:30 at night and then you got to wake up sometimes at 5:30 to go do rehab before practice and all that, they're giving him some more time off in the evenings now. But, you know, Sean's the type of guy, he likes to get up early, so do I, get practice, I don't want to say out of the way, but practice when it's a little bit cooler in the morning where you can kind of maximize what you can get out of the guys as opposed to get them out in the heat later in the afternoon where you got to pull back a little bit just based upon the heat. But, you know, I believe he's loosened up a little bit. Training camp, I only did one under Sean back in the day, and it was a grind, but we needed it. You know, that was a team that was trying to break the drought. We had a lot of guys that needed to get better, go out and hit a little bit, and I believe over the years they've toned that back a little bit. But with a Sean McDermott training camp, it's going to be a lot of competition. There's a lot of ones versus ones where, you know, you're trying to see what you got out on the field, and we talked about it this morning on the podcast. There's not a ton of jobs up for grabs starting-wise, but there's plenty of depth spots where they got to actually go out and play football to be able to evaluate those guys during practices.
We know there is, I think, one legitimate competition that's going to happen, and that is Tre'Davious White and Max Harrison, or anybody else, I guess, at corner opposite Christian Benford. Knowing the way the Bills operate, Tre'Davious White knowing the system, re-signing him, but also having a first-round pick that they spent on Max Harrison, how do you expect reps to go and this to play out as far as the Bills' evaluation? Maybe not even a prediction who actually wins the job, but how do they go about deciding who wins the job?
Yeah, I think they'll rotate those guys because they want them both to be going against similar competition throughout practices. And so I expect those guys to, you know, maybe it's every other day they work with the starters. It could be every other series of practice. One of those guys is with the starters. And to me, I love the Trey White signing. He gives you a lot of stability there. You know what you're going to get, or you think you know what you're going to get with the Tre'Davious White after being healthy last season. But to me, I'd love to see them kind of just throw Max Harrison into the fire, let him maybe take his lumps early in the season, but then allow him to progress to where towards the end of the season, he's not playing like a rookie anymore. And I just love his upside, love his athleticism. And I mean, he's got a guy like Tre'Davious White he can learn from. He can see him in the system playing the same spot. But I think week one, I'd expect to see Harrison out there.
Eric Wood on the West Hur Hotline. Eric, obviously, you put a long time in this league in the offensive line. You've played for the Bills' current offensive line coach, Aaron Cromer. You sung his praises. I agree. I think he's a terrific offensive line coach. I take my cues from you when people ask me, and I say, Eric Wood always says that Aaron really does a great job of tailoring his coaching to each individual player, their body type, their style. It's not just one size fits all. It's you really have to do that. Having 10 guys returning, all starters, all backups, and Aaron Cromer as their coach, how big of a benefit can that really be for the Buffalo Bills?
Well, it's tremendous because you're not working on chemistry, whether that's with the coach, whether that's with the guys playing around you. You're simply going to training camp and you're saying, okay, how can I get better individually? How can I get better as a group? Not, you know, how's our footwork going to be on this block? And you can really kind of hit those next stages. And you know, Aaron Cromer is going to be teaching offensive line play 401. They're not starting at 101 like they likely did with him trying to teach techniques and whatnot a few years ago when he came back to the Bills. And so it's a tremendous benefit. I mean, their offensive line is one of the tops in the league, and it has been for a while. And at times they take some criticism, and we always talk about it on the broadcast, and part of that's because people are just watching them each and every week, and they're not watching O-line play from around the league. But the Bills have so much depth on their offensive line right now. It wouldn't surprise me to see Brandon Bean try to maybe flip one of those guys late at the end of the preseason for maybe a draft pick, maybe a player where if you get dinged up during training camp in the preseason where they need some depth at a different position. I mean, they are loaded on the offensive line.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so they go there. They have this whole thing play out at the end of the day. You got a few guys there. Who's a guy maybe you look at that maybe you never know? Maybe he could steal a spot. You know, they draft Chase Lunt. They got a couple of guys in the picture in the back end. Richard Garage, is there a guy there you say, you know what, I wouldn't be stunned. It might be tough, but this guy's going to compete.
Yeah, I mean, last year the surprise was Tylan Grable, and then he got dinged up early in the season, and Ryan Vandermark, you know, took over that swing spot, but throughout training camp and at the end of the preseason, Tylan Grable had earned that job.
That's
and
right.
So is he a guy that becomes the swing guy? You mentioned Chase Lunt, you know, whether he can be a guy that, you know, makes the initial 53 or a guy maybe he becomes one of your developmental guys on the practice squad, like a Ryan Vandermark. You know, they brought in Kendrick Green, and, you know, he had a meniscus tear in Houston. He started early in his career for Pittsburgh, a guy that brings in some experience, but and you got like a Cedric Van Granger who got some experience last year, was on the 53, and I mean, they're loaded. I don't know if there's any true surprises there, but I think one of the fun position battles that's going to be, we're going to watch throughout the preseason games and throughout training camp is who's that swing guy behind both those tackles, because they got two good ones in Grable and Vandermark, and it wouldn't surprise me to see them maybe work Grable in at some guard throughout training camp as well, just to see, okay, what kind of position flexibility does he have? If we feel very comfortable with Vandermark as our backup swing tackle, can Grable now pop inside if we need him to.
Yeah, and then finally, Eric, Alec Anderson's going to be a very interesting guy because, you know, he's a guy that has been the sixth offensive lineman. They now have Jackson Hawes. Maybe you can transition him to allow him to be a little bit more of the swing guy. How important is it? You've had guys like that. You had Ryan Groy. You had Ryan Bates, when you played, and you know of the guys that have been around this team that have had that job. How important is a guy like Alec Anderson, what his versatility can provide this team?
He's extremely important, and obviously plays a lot in that 6-0 line package. He's an asset there. He brings an attitude. They're out there, a guy that we would say plays through the whistle on each and every play, gets in the guys' heads on the opposite side of the ball. But a guy like that's valuable, and the Bills have been fortunate to stay healthy on their offensive line for the most part the last couple of years. But, you know, injuries happen in the NFL. To have a guy like that that's got experience in-game, even if it's at tight end, he's been out on the field. It's not going to shock him if he has to go into the game at any of those positions. Then, you know, looking towards the future, you know, Osiris Torrence at some point is going to get paid a ton.
Yeah.
And you already got two really high-paid tackles. Connor McGovern's contract's going to expire, I believe, after this year, and then also mm-hmm. David Edwards. And so how does that look moving forward? Because you can't pay everybody. Is an Alec Anderson a guy that mm-hmm. can fill in one of those two spots potentially next year?
All right, buddy. Thanks. I really appreciate you doing this. Let's tell everybody about a longer conversation we had this morning and where everybody can find that.
Yeah, so Center on Buffalo podcast. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it anywhere you find your podcast. That'll release on Thursday morning. Fun conversation between the two of us. We go through each and every position group, talk about the position battles, all the storylines. It's always a fun conversation when we get together on those two. So that'll come out this Thursday morning. I think everyone's going to enjoy it.
All right. Well, listen, I will see you in a few weeks. First preseason game. Can't wait. Looking forward to it. Another year on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network with Chris Brown, Eric Wood, and me and the whole gang that helps bring it to you. So thanks a lot for doing this. And, of course, Center on Buffalo. Everybody can find a longer conversation. Have a great day, buddy.
Yep, you too. Thanks for having me on, brother.
Yeah, you got it. That is Eric Wood, former Buffalo Bills center. And, of course, radio color analyst on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. We'll take a timeout here. We'll come back. I do have an article up at WGR550.com I want to touch on, which is one storyline for each defensive position. We'll do that, but also Matt Perino from Syracuse.com, the Shout Podcast. He joins me at 11 a.m. here on the final Extra Point show before training camp starts tomorrow. All right, head over to WGR550.com. That's where I have my not only every one storyline for every offensive position yesterday and specialist yesterday, but today, one storyline for every defensive position. And I think the biggest storyline, I think the two biggest storylines of camp are one that's more short-term, one that's more long-term. The short-term is more James Cook because we're going to kind of find out. But that could become long-term, right? And then more the long-term is the highlight of this particular article on the defensive side is what happens at cornerback two. And as I was just talking with Eric Wood about a little while ago here on the Extra Point Show, like how do you determine how you get there? How does the team determine how to get there? Not necessarily saying who's going to win the job, but how do they determine who's going to win the job, right? That's to me, a lot of it's that more fascinating even. Which is, how do they divide up the reps? Why are they dividing up the reps a certain amount of ways? How do they play in the preseason? I would suspect Max Harrison gets quite a bit of run in the preseason because you kind of know what Tre'Davious White is or what he can do. Now, you still need to see it from Tre'Davious White. He is still coming off. You know, last year was the first year off that last injury he had, the Achilles, and you still want to see him go out there and perform, but you kind of know. So, I think Max Harrison probably gets a lot more run in the games, the preseason games. But how does it work in practice? Is he getting more reps? Do we go out there on tomorrow and Trey is out there, you know, 70% of the time with the ones, 100%. And then all of a sudden the next day it's a little less and the next day it's a little less. Does that give an indication of how they're bringing Max Harrison along and they want him to win the job or at least give him every opportunity to win the job, which I think they will, and he's progressing with that? Because one thing I'll tell you is they're not going to put him on the field if they don't feel he's ready. Don't we already know that about how the Bills handle younger players? There is a narrative I don't love the word, but it's true, a narrative that Sean McDermott just doesn't play younger players. It's not true, but he won't play them if they're not ready. Like, he needs to be absolutely sure. But he plays younger players. For crying out loud, Christian Benford started as a sixth-round pick as a rookie in week one. Osiris Torrence played week one and played every single game and every single snap as a rookie. Rookies do play under this coach. They do, folks. I promise you. But you got to trust them. And maybe, and there's an argument to be made, that sometimes maybe the coach can go a little too far with, I don't know if I trust him enough, and you should throw him out there a little sooner and throw him a little bit more, give him that experience, those reps. I get that. But I don't expect Max Harrison to be on the field unless at that position, how important it is, how critical it is early in the season, unless they absolutely trust that he knows what to do, where to be, understands the defensive concepts, and is not going to make mistakes. Because I think they believe that with Tre'Davious White. The difference is you might not get the high-end play, the ceiling with Trey that you might get with Max Harrison. And that's what you have to balance. But I think the first thing to balance is don't put yourself in a position where you're going to lose the game. Don't lose the game before you can win it. That might sound conservative. And you may think that that's a... Yeah, you're sitting there going, oh, no. Just go out there and who cares if he gets beat? Yeah, you care. Who cares until it actually happens and you say, oh, my God, I can't believe he just got beat deep on that. Because I saw it last year. When it happened once in a while, a couple of times with DeMar Hamlin, like in the playoff game. Right? I mean, he was steady as you go, but as soon as you get beat deep, it's like, okay, you need something better there. And different. So, yeah, I just think it's going to be really interesting. We'll take a timeout. When we come back, Matt Perino of Syracuse.com, the Shout Podcast. We are all ready for training camp. I think we are. We're going to ask Matt if he's ready for training camp. It all comes your way next in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And by the way, of course, you can get connected here on the show at 803-0550. And when you do, that's getting connected with our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Matt Perino up next.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
The Bills have just made some roster moves. How about that? Nobody on PUP as of right now. Maybe that happens later today. Maybe tomorrow. Maybe not at all. That would be great if they don't have anybody there, but... Here's what they've done. They have signed wide receiver David White, originally signed by the Jags as a UFA after the 24 draft, and spent a season there. They've also signed tight end Matt Sokol. He spent 2024 on the Steelers practice squad, originally an undrafted free agent with the Chargers in 2019. He's been around a little bit. Matt Sokol. But notably, they've released a wide receiver. I believe it's, you say his name, it's Kelly Akiyari. But also, Jake Camarda has been released. He's the punter. Now, I actually will tell you, I've been saying, I thought Jake Camarda would win the punting job over Brad Robbins. I mean, you look at what he's done in the league so far, Jake Camarda actually twice with the Buccaneers was top five in the NFL in yards per punt. The question was, could he place punts? Could he be a guy that could really kind of do it in situationally? And maybe the Bills just felt, yep, we're okay. We have one punter, Brad Robbins. We're going to roll with him. I don't think that means Brad Robbins is guaranteed to make the 53. You could do anything at the end of camp where you feel like you need another guy. You go out there, you claim somebody, you sign somebody. But the Bills now down to one punter on the roster. That's Brad Robbins. All right.
Also from Ian Rappaport, the Bills have activated Landon Jackson from PUP.
So Landon Jackson is coming off the PUP list. There we go. All right. All of it adds up to a great time to bring in my buddy Matt Perino on the Wester Hotline. Shout Podcast, of course, Ryan Talbot, Syracuse.com. Lots of stuff happening this morning as we get ready, Matt.
Man, I'm typing a mile a minute here.
I know, right? I feel bad. I'm like, Matt's probably got this news happening. He's got to report it and tweet it out. We're doing the show here, so it's all happening pretty fast here.
It's all good. A lot of fans immediately like, wait a second, this doesn't quite add up. I mean, a couple of our beat colleagues, mainly Joe Biscaglia, cough, cough, were setting up this punter competition for this summer, and now we sit here with Brad Robbins. But I think back a couple years ago, if you remember, they brought in Sam Martin really late in the game. I mean, teams make roster decisions all summer long, all the way in the lead up to the start of the season. The Bills end up going through the camp and the preseason with Robbins and don't like what they have, then they can always look to the veteran market to bring in another guy.
Yep.
But he might have made an impression. Like, I haven't talked – we'll probably get to talk to Sean tomorrow about Robbins and maybe what he did over the spring to maybe at least win the job to go into camp, to not want to have that competition play out in the summer. But the Akiari, the receiver that you mentioned that was released, I thought he struggled quite a bit in the spring just from a – his hands perspective. Like, they go through the individual work and consistently dropping balls. And I just feel like when the competition on the back end is so solid with guys like LaVisca Chenault and Tyrell Shavers and KJ Hamler, they're going to continue to cycle in guys. If you're not making plays or if you're not able to kind of do the basic stuff, you're not going to last very long.
Yeah, I just got a tweet here from a fan. Getting connected with our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Dalamana says, are we worried about punter situation in relation to Bass having a new holder? I do think there's a bit of an overreaction to that sometimes, but I do think it's also a solid question considering it's been something we've talked about. But now you get Brad Robbins, and that is interesting, right? Where you made the point, Sam Martin came in, you know, late. It is a position that you don't want to be messing too much with the operation of the snapper, the holder, and the kicker. And I think that's probably why you want to get to a guy a little bit earlier rather than later.
And maybe they've just determined over the spring that, like, getting Robbins in place and maybe building a little bit of a rapport with Tyler Bass is good enough to send this into the summer. And they're saying, like, listen, maybe we take a little bit of a step back just from a punting perspective, but what could it mean for Tyler Bass? I mean, I know he's had Martin the last couple of years. I don't know what level of holder, to your point. I do think that kind of gets blown up a little bit. But I think continuity is important, too. Like, for Bass, building that, like, rapport, I think early on it was it Bajorquez, or was he gone already by the time that Bass got into the league? I'm trying to think.
It's a great question. I think Bass came in after, if I remember right.
Okay. So, you know, either way, it's just one of those situations where the Bills are very calculated with these kinds of moves and putting guys in certain positions to be successful. And who knows? I mean, maybe Robbins came in and Chris Tabor, the new special teams coordinator, this guy's been around the league a long time. He knows what he wants in all of these roles. And maybe Robbins just did enough already to say, hey, we don't have to waste our time. Let's build the relationship with these two guys because we're so convinced that we like where we're at with him right now.
While I was in Italy, it was the Bills had placed Landon Jackson on PUP, and you were the person I saw that reported that the Bills, that he should be ready to go, that you were told, hey, according to your sources, that he would be ready to go for camp. And that looks like it's the case, Matt. They have activated Landon Jackson off the PUP list, which is good news.
I mean, it's nice to have a win every once in a while, right, Sal?
Yeah, that's right.
You never know these days with people saying people aren't good. I remember right before the start of minicamp, no shade to Adam Schefter. I like Adam, but like sometimes you get fed some bad stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting today seeing Tom Pelissero come out with obviously the Cook side of things, right? Like probably pumping like what his representatives have been sending along. But I don't see, and not to get off of your point about Landon Jackson, I don't see the upside for a hold in for James Cook based on everything that he said during minicamp. Like at that, that was the point to really like make one final statement before maybe you could come back to the negotiating table. Now we're here. Now it's prep for the season. He talked about like building up, you know, being a leader and being somebody in the building and building that rapport with his teammates and that bond with the team as they try to go and win a Super Bowl, which James Cook said is important to him. And so I don't know what that would accomplish to help better the pursuit for that goal if he's to come and show up and then just say, yeah, but I'm only going to do this much. Like, I don't think that's going to necessarily be the ticket for him. Landon Jackson, I think this is a really big development because if he were to miss, like, even, like, four or five practices, the slower practices before they put the pads on, I think that would put him at a disadvantage. And we saw what happened to Cole Bishop last year when he missed a couple. So getting him back and healthy, you hope – all of these young players are able to stay healthy. Max Harrison with the tweaked hamstring back in the spring. You hope that he's 100% going into this thing so the competitions can start to kind of unfold.
Matt Parrino here on the Wester Hotline. Bills open up training camp tomorrow at St. John Fisher. 9:15, Sean McDermott will speak to the media. 9:45, the team will be on the practice field. And then we will hear from Brandon Bean after practice. And yeah, let's stay with that with James Cook, because I agree. That, to me, that's still the number one storyline. But let's be honest, Matt, it could kind of go away tomorrow, right? If he shows up and just is part of practice and does everything, okay, he's a guy going to last year of his contract. This happens all the time, right? Not a big deal. If he shows up and he doesn't participate in everything, now we have a story on our hands, especially with Hard Knocks out there. So how much could this kind of swing one way or the other, depending on everything that happens?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I never got the vibe. Like, it's hard to read James Cook, right? Like, when he's on the practice field, he's pretty much the same guy no matter what. I mean, he's not super over the top. Like, he's not super chatty. He's not super chatty in his availabilities with us either. So it's hard to get a read with him. It felt like, you know, when he showed up to minicamp, there was a little bit of a, I don't even want to call it an attitude, but just like a subtle frustration. When we spoke to him after practice and the questions started to mount, I felt the frustration a little bit in that as well. But he's kind of gone back. Like, I don't want people to get it twisted. I think James Cook is a great dude. Like, I actually think that, like, he's well-loved in the locker room. Like, guys want to play with him. Guys are rooting for him. Guys want him to get the deal. The part of the thing, the problem is just the way the NFL is structured. When you're paying your quarterback what the Bills are paying him, you only have so much resources to allocate elsewhere. They're paying two Pro Bowl / All-Pro level tackles, almost top of the market money. They're paying an edge rusher, not top of the market money, but a pretty healthy contract. They signed a corner. They signed their middle linebacker. They signed their slot receiver. And by the way, their first-round draft pick at tight end, who's kind of the starter, right? His backup, quote-unquote, is making $12.5 million per season. So there's guys on this team that are making a lot of money. And I get the arguments for, like, the salary. You can do whatever you want with the salary cap. I've seen people bantying about this morning about a potential Trey Hendrickson deal. I've been on board with that since, you know, March. Like, find a way to get it done, find a way to make it work. I think that that would be just a potential game-changing type move with all the other moves that they've had. I don't know if it's really doable, but it's just hard to fit it all in. And then if you're taking the stance that you want top-of-the-market money, when you want it, you're basically putting yourself into the category of Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley. You have to ask yourself a hard question as the organization is, like, is he that level of player? Is he maybe a tier below, which is not bad, but it's just a tier below, and we just can't reach that kind of dollar amount year over year, especially at that position.
Do you agree with me when I say that I said earlier today, and you kind of touched on this a minute ago, when it comes to James Cook, like, what's the end game, right? Let's say he holds in. Okay, let's say he holds in. Like, what is it for? What's the end game? Because do you agree with me when I say that's not going to get Brandon Bean to suddenly bend over backwards and give him $15 million? That's not the way Brandon Bean operates, Matt.
He can't. Like, he can't go to that number. Like, we've all looked at all of this. There's extensions on the horizon. There's going to be other moves, like, coming up maybe next offseason that he wants to consider. And he's got a guy. Like, this comes back. I agree with both statements that you just made. Brandon Bean won't be, like, forced into anything. What is the ultimate, trying to figure out the ultimate end game of a hold in is perplexing. Here's the other piece that I don't think we talk nearly enough about. Do I think Ray Davis is, like, the next coming of, you know, an elite level running back? Probably not, but I don't think anybody truly understands what the team thinks of him, like, how good he can be given a more featured role. If the Bills give a lot of those red zone carries to Ray Davis last year or play him even 10% more of the snaps, and James Cook doesn't have that kind of breakout statistical season that he did, are we having a completely different conversation around this entire thing this offseason? The Bills believe in Ray Davis. They also believe in Ty Johnson. And there's also another thing that's really interesting. We're a year removed, and this three-headed monster in their backfield has been so good. We've kind of forgotten about Frank Gore Jr. There was people last training camp, if you remember, that were pounding the table for him to make the 53. So they have some talent in that room. I think that if James Cook isn't a part of this picture long term, they can draft another running back. They could sign a running back. Ray Davis, get a look at that this year in probably a larger role. And then if he has to take the reins as the starter in 2026, I think you're comfortable with that if you're the Bills.
Matt Perino here on the West Shore Hotline. Bills begin training camp tomorrow. Okay, let's talk about the other big storyline, which I think it's James Cook number one. And then, of course, what happens at cornerback two? It just seems like it's the only true competition for a starting job on either side of the ball. How do you think this starts, at least at training camp?
I think it starts with Tre'Davious White and Christian Benford. And I think that he has a very solid understanding of the coaching staff, the system, and what's needed and necessary. And almost in a way, I think the Bills would want to position it like, hey, rookie, Maxwell Hairston, take notes, right? Like, watch this guy for the first week. And you're going to get your opportunities. But this is how it's supposed to be done. Because I think from a practice, preparation, getting your body right perspective, especially after the two injuries, there's no better teacher than Tre'Davious White could be. And then also Christian Benford, right? Like on the other side. So that's the first piece of it. I think there'll be some watching, some teaching, some taking it slow. But I really do think, and maybe this is more of what I think should happen than predicting what will happen, because I think it's going to be a true competition. They're going to go with what the best option on day one. The Bills have had to have had conversations pre and post draft about, all right, what's the deep dive on Kyer Elam? Why didn't it work? What could we have done differently? And then it's about implementing now with another chance at a first-round cornerback that is a different style of player than Elam. Fast, but a more zone-heavy corner in college as opposed to the press-man-heavy corner that Kyer Elam was. Let's figure out a way to put him in a position to be successful and to get him on the field somehow in year one in a prominent role. And the one thing I will say is, like, you know what you have in Dane Jackson. If Tre'Davious White wins the job, he struggled to stay healthy over the last couple of years. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be any long-term starting type situation. And maybe you get to a point where maybe he doesn't start the season, Hairston, but maybe he's in a rotation and you get to a point where he wins the job based on how he plays and performs, which I don't think Elam ever really did enough in any of the 3 years. While he played well at times, and I've said that, I'm on the record saying that, I don't think he ever had a stretch that forced the coaches to keep him on the field. And I think that they may look for that from Hairston if he's in a rotation or even if he's got to earn it in practice if he's not playing.
The only changes on the offensive side of the ball are the two wide receivers. Out are Mac Hollins and Amari Cooper. In are Joshua Palmer and Elijah Moore. I mean, Joshua Palmer's on this team. They gave him a nice contract. They target him early in free agency. Not necessarily Elijah Moore. It came after the draft. They gave him some money, some guarantees. Not a huge contract. How do you handicap, you know, where that wide receiver group looks, especially thinking the top five, Shakir, Coleman, Palmer, who am I missing there? And Curtis Samuel, you can even throw him in the mix, and he's got some money there. It would cost him quite a bit of money to move on from. How do you see that group right there beyond the top three at least?
I mean, I like the group. I think the addition of Moore to that group now makes it really interesting, and it's going to be hard for guys like Laviska Shenault and KJ Hamler, Tyrell Shavers to make a run at a roster spot, although I think all three of those guys will be competitive and they'll place them in competitions. Moore to me is like a bit of an X factor. I think before his signing, you could see a lot of what the Bills did with this room and by what they didn't do. You know, bringing in Josh Palmer and what they're hoping is a supercharged version of what they wanted Amari Cooper to be last year. I know Palmer's never been the level of player that Cooper was in his prime, but that wasn't the Cooper they had last year, right? Even pre-injury, I don't know. He might have taken a step back. He never got back to 100% health. But in the big moments, the good moments for him on this team, not only did he put up a couple of big games, but his arrival coincided with the kind of ascension of Keon Coleman before his injury. And so those two things, Palmer's arrival, the separation, the route running, and what that can mean for Keon Coleman on the other side is big. You have one of the best, if not the best, slot receiver in the league in Khalil Shakir. Samuel is the just got to stay healthy. When he was healthy, he made plays in this offense. It wasn't always, you know, in a bunch of big targeted or big reception games. but he found a way to make some big plays, especially down the stretch last season. I thought he had a couple of nice moments. More to me is like, where does he fit in? Are you going to ask him to play all of the different positions and maybe get a little bit more creative with what you do with your personnel? Get Shakir on the outside a little bit more. Get Keon Coleman into more of that big slot role that a lot of, you know, film experts have said, even going back to the draft, that that's where he projects better in more of like a Chris Godwin type role. Joe Brady seems a little bit more open to that this offseason, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little bit more creativity with the personnel packages, but also with where they line up on the field and using them in different kind of alignments.
And then the last position that is really interesting that I think has become a bit polarizing is return spot. You know, I've been on record in saying, and I think, you know, I just think Brandon Codrington is the guy right there. Now, does it mean that he's absolutely guaranteed to be on the team? No, but if he's not, who's the returner? I mean, I could see a scenario where maybe an Elijah Moore could do it, but Sean McDermott really, he has proven you got to trust a guy back there. And they're not just going to keep a guy just because he does more than what Brandon Codrington does at corner, if that makes sense. You know, I don't think that's something the Bills will do. They want to make sure they have a guy there they can really trust. And up until the playoffs last year when he got hurt and he didn't have all the reps in practice and he couldn't be on the field, they didn't have an issue with Brandon Codrington. But how do you see this playing out?
That's a great question. I think in the end, my pre-training camp prediction is that he won't make the roster and they'll figure out a way to use that extra spot for somebody that's going to contribute elsewhere, because they can do a multitude of things. I mean, they can put Shakir back there. And for as good as Codrington was last year, and I thought he was good, I thought he was a field position weapon for the Bills at times. You know, I think Shakir is good too. Now, the question you ask yourself in that situation is, do you want to put Shakir back there and chance him getting, you know, hit extra times?
I just can't see it after the contract they gave him and what role he's going to play. You know what I mean?
Right. But also, like, if you've done these probably 53-man roster projections, like, when you get down to the end of this thing, there are some really tough decisions on linebackers. Do you keep 5 or 6? Do you want to move off of Baylen Specter finally? Obviously, tight end is going to be 3. The offensive line, do you want to keep 9 or 10 offensive linemen? We can make an argument that the offensive line group, like, throughout all 3 positions, is the deepest the Bills have ever had.
100%.
And they have some really tough decisions at the bottom of that those roster battles. So it's a great question. I think Codrington is somebody that they obviously valued enough to give up draft capital to go get last year, and he looked the part for them a season ago. I think he's gonna be tested. I think they're going to give a lot of different looks to some guys throughout this spring or the summer, and then see where you're at the very end, where you're at injury-wise. That's another piece of this that we can't project, and then make the decision based on that.
Yeah, it should be fun. It should be interesting. What are you looking forward to most, being out at camp, and how often are you going to be staying out there versus coming home?
I'm going to not be out there as much as most years, only because I got to come back for some baseball stuff, and we got a little trip coming up in the middle of camp. Birthday trip for my son.
Nice.
Which is actually locked down. We haven't revealed that to him.
Oh, yet, okay. So we'll keep it. Nobody's listening. We'll keep it quiet.
Thank you. I appreciate it. But no, I'm excited. I need to get my milkshake from the dairy. We got to get over to the pub a couple times. It's awesome. I just like connecting with Bills fans. We have a live event, as I know you do.
Yep.
There, which I think is a great way. I went to yours last year, hoping to get to it this year. It's just a great time for the whole Bills community, media, fans, everything to just kind of come together and hang out. It's a 2-week party in Pittsburgh.
So a couple months ago, I told our buddy Sal Marana about, you know, taking Max to the Yankees game and how he didn't and it was a surprise. Like, I didn't tell him it's a surprise. So he comes on the air, speaking of what you just did, he comes on the air and he's like, oh yeah, and I know you're taking Max to the game. I'm like, no, he doesn't know. And it went over the radio, right? And I'm like, now somebody at school's gonna be like, oh, I heard you're going to a Yankees game. Thankfully, like, no one said anything. He wasn't listening at the time, but, you know, he was at school on that day, but that didn't happen. So whenever everything happens, it's gonna be great. I love it for you. I also love the fact I saw that your team won the Grand Island tournament when I was away. Is that what it was?
Yeah, we won one of the brackets. That was really cool.
That's awesome. One of the brackets.
That was a nice moment for him. Yeah, that was really fun.
Awesome.
It's been a fun summer, man. I'm ready for football season now.
Yeah, me too. Tell everybody where they can find you and Ryan and everything else you guys are doing.
Yeah, we the best place to find us is over on X. Probably that's where everything funnels, at Matt Parrino. The Shout Podcast is on all platforms, video, audio. We got that text insider line. I put a tweet out about that today. We're doing a special insider-only Q&A tonight. Get everybody jacked up for training camp. So 2 week free trial. Go get that. Appreciate you having me on, buddy.
Yeah, you got it. And make sure you're listening to the next segment because Pat Hammer is going to tell you how to dress for the next week, okay?
Beautiful. Appreciate it.
You got it. All right, Matt Parrino right there. Thanks a lot. Matt Parrino on the Western Hotline. Patrick Hammer, WGRZ TV2 Chief Meteorologist. Are you going to training camp, everybody? Are you heading out to Rochester? Do you live in Rochester? Are you wondering what the Bills are going to be dealing with as far as any heat is concerned? Any rain, right? We have to think about that. If you have tickets to a training camp practice, it's all very important. And that's why Pat Hammer is going to join me next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Hammer time.
Oh, yeah. It is that time. It's Hammer time. We're going to be hearing a lot more from Patrick Hammer during the regular season, of course, but no better time to see what's going on out in Rochester, out in Pittsburgh, the weather for training camp, whether you're a fan that's attending or a player or coach, want to know what it's going to be like on the field. Pat Hammer joins me right now on the Western Hotline, WGRZ TV2 Chief Meteorologist. It's been a little while, buddy. How are you?
I am fine. I'm living vicariously through you and your exploits and your travels and, you know, keeping up with you, man, that's a full-time job in itself, you know?
I can't even keep up with me sometimes, to be quite honest with you. But yeah, we had a great, great time. You ever been over there? You ever been to Italy?
Many years ago, yeah. I did Rome like you did, did Naples. I did kind of the south, went to this island called Capri, which is off the coast of Naples. Again, this was back way a long time ago, but just like you said, I heard you talking how old means a whole different thing over there. When you're looking at the Colosseum and all of that, and it's like, oh, this is like thousands of years old.
It's amazing. It really is. We did the north on this one. I've been to the south, I've been to Naples and went to Pompeii a couple of years ago. This time was mostly Rome, and then we went up to Florence and Perugia, and then over to, I had never been to Venice or Lake Como. I did not. First of all, I did not see George Clooney, for everybody who asked.
Yeah, Lake Como. That's the first thing. That's the first thing you think about when you think of.
Yep. No doubt. No doubt. But boy, Venice. It truly is amazing to watch a city where it's just boat traffic everywhere and no streets.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and just the design of the city and how it functions and how, you know, one of the things that we're hearing though is what's their vibe towards tourists? Are they glad to see you there? Are they happy or do they think it's too much when they have a lot of tourists?
It's interesting you say that. Obviously it's a lifeblood, right? Of the economy, but the biggest issue, we heard this a couple of times from a couple of people, is there's so many like tourists now and it's getting so expensive. A lot of the natives are moving away and that's really hurting them. And they wish in a lot of these little cities, in a lot of these towns in Italy, it's becoming like they're kind of losing their original identity of the people, if that makes sense.
Right.
You know, and that's tough to see, but I understand when people are coming in, the prices get jacked up and the people who are living there can't afford to live there anymore. And they grew up there, right? That's their hometown.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people are coming in from out of town, but yeah, I mean, they also, you know, rely on a lot of the tourism. It was a great time. It was hot. As you can imagine, July in Italy is always hot.
Yeah.
And you come back here, it was hot the first day, then it got a little cooler yesterday, and then we're ramping back up. So let's talk about what it looks like out at St. John Fisher, at least for the next several days, if not over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, first, you just wish camp could have started yesterday because this is not – you cannot – get more weather perfection than what's happening right now. I mean, this morning I would even call it refreshing and reinvigorating. It was in the 50s and highs in the 70s, no humidity. It's just perfect. And it makes you realize that summers around here can just be the best weather anywhere. That's not going to last. The heat builds starting with the first day of training camp. So whereas Rochester today is in the upper 70s, tomorrow, mid to upper 80s. I think the worst of the heat, if you want to call it that, comes after practice, which is a good thing. But Thursday's the day that it's going to be stifling. You know, that's when you
get the heat. It's going to be in the low to mid 90s in Rochester. And then the humidity, it's going to have that heat index, you know, that how it feels could be closer to 98, 99 Thursday afternoon. So that's going to be the hottest day. As we head into, I don't know exactly the camp schedule, but I believe they have Friday, Saturday practice and not Sunday.
No, it's they're off Saturday. So it's 3 days and then a day off and then 3 days. So you got Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, off day Saturday, back on the field Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Okay. So, yeah, starting tomorrow, it's going to get warm. The hottest day Thursday. It stays in the 80s on Friday. There, in terms of rain chances, the one day that you might have to navigate a little rain would be Friday. That has a thunderstorm chance. You know, I went back and looked at the last four training camps since COVID, when they, of course, were here in Orchard Park. And every camp has had one, but at the max 2 days of rain to deal with. It's just kind of one of those things. You're going to get one day that a thunderstorm rolls through. The best camp ever was the camp 2 years ago when it was in the 70s and 80s all camp long, no 90s. Last year was brutal. It ended very, very hot. It was a very hot camp. This year, it's looking like it's kind of trending that way, because into next week, you're going to keep the heat at least through Wednesday, Thursday. But, you know, looking way down there, I see a weather situation not too dissimilar with what we're dealing now for the scrimmage that they play a week from Friday back here in Orchard Park. The weather then looks like it's going to get more like this again, which is a good thing.
Okay, good. So you mean like a little bit cooler, not as humid. You're not talking about like storms and everything like that. Like anything
like
that on the horizon.
I think it's going to be I would say a week of heat, and then followed by a transition to something that, admittedly, last week, I think you might have been out of town still, it felt like a touch of fall. Ooh. Like Thursday, Friday, it was crazy. It's mid-July, and it just felt like it kind of felt like that way this morning. I think we're going to trend that way towards the second half of camp, including the return, the scrimmage.
Return of the red and blue, I think.
Red and blue. Thank you. Not the blue and red. Red and blue. I think it's going to be pretty comfortable as we head towards that Friday and then the following weekend.
Pat Hammer, WGRZ TV2 Chief Meteorologist on the West Her Hotline. All right, so when the schedule came out, we kind of had this broad overview of what are we looking at? Yeah. That time of year in these cities. We're a little closer now. I know you can't specifically predict what it's going to be like week one, but what have the models or the patterns kind of suggested maybe as we're getting closer to September?
Well, as you look at the schedule, you realize that there's a lot of opportunities for wintry games towards the end of the year. You have, the last quarter of the season. You've got, most of the games are in this direction, right? You've got Cincinnati, you've got Pittsburgh, you've got New York, of course, New England.
Every game the Bills play except for one is East Coast time, Eastern time zone.
Yeah.
And they're all indoors. I'm sorry. They're all outdoors, at the end of the season like that. Yep.
Which opens the door for, weather impact games, if you will, towards the end of the season where maybe things are getting a little tight with the race, if that's how things go. So right now, that's going to be kind of our focus. Things look, things could go either way in those late fall games. But as you head into mid-November and beyond, that's when things could get a little dicier. And right now, here it is midsummer, but there's a couple of little things that we're seeing. Nothing that's going to dictate where exactly we think the winter is going to go. But a couple of little signals are beginning to emerge that suggest, I know you and I have talked about El Nino, La Nina, and it seems like every year there's one or the other. It usually is the case that our coldest winters, or maybe snowier winters, are when you have what we call La Nada, meaning it's neither an El Nino or a La Nina. You're kind of in what's called the neutral phase. And that's where we're potentially headed, which could open the door for maybe a cooler winter than we've had over the last couple of years, and maybe a snowier one as well. So that's something we're looking at. There's the other whether the other thing is, if you ever get into not a strong La Nina, which we had 2 years ago, a weak La Nina, whether it's a weak La Nina or neutral, no El Nino nor La Nina, that's when you tend to get the colder, snowier winters here. So I'm not saying that's going to be the case, but that's a signal we're beginning to see, you know, 4 months before the snow arrives.
What about before that? A lot of home games early in the season, right? I mean, you got you got week one at home, and then they go on the road, and then they come right back at night game on Thursday, a night game on a Sunday, and then a Sunday afternoon night game. I'm sorry, a Sunday afternoon home game as well. Have the models shown anything about where we might be early on in the season?
Well, first of all, you look at what's going on across the country now.
Yeah.
Every newscast that you see, or every, you know, social media, news breaking thing, it's about flooding, right? Mm-hmm. There is just flooding here, flooding there, rain everywhere. Texas, which is usually baking in the summer, is just, you know, having these horrible flood situations. What's interesting though, is that it's wet everywhere, but not here. It's been incredibly dry, believe it or not, here in Buffalo. For the month of July, we've had a quarter of an inch of rain. That's it. Usually you can get that in 10 minutes. We haven't had that in the first 21 days of July. So what we're seeing is that this summer is behaving very differently than last summer or the summer before. So what does that mean in terms of late summer, early fall-like weather? I just have a hunch it's going to be different. It seems that heat does not want to lock in across. We've had some hot days, but we haven't had any like sustained heat here.
Right.
We haven't had any perennial wet periods. I know we all think that we had this horrible spring. Yeah, it was kind of wet in May and June, but it wasn't awful. And quite frankly, since the calendar flipped to July, hey, go play golf. Hit a drive. Hit the fairway. You're going to get an extra 100 yards on your drive right now because it's so dry. You know, and what that means is that there's an opportunity for the early part of the football season. You know, it's hard to give it a definite. I just don't see any sustained heat around here building for August into September. If that's kind of any, you know, link to what happens when the season starts. I just think this may be the peak of our summer heat in the next 5 to 7 days.
Pat, I will play in a desert if it means an extra 100 yards on my drive. I just want you to know
if
that.
If you hit one of those worm burner drives, man, you're going to go forever, right?
Yeah, no kidding,
The fairways are literally, I mean, I'm walking, I don't know, my backyard, I feel like walking on my lawn is like walking on cornflakes right now.
Honestly, same thing. I came back from Italy. I've been gone for 10 days, and I'm like, oh, the grass. I look, and I'm like, it's not that bad, and it's super dry. I need to water it, actually. It's been so dry.
Right. Yeah, there are areas in our area, you know, the hills of the southern tier have been fine, but from the South Towns to Buffalo to Niagara Falls to Clarence to Batavia, it has been everywhere is wet across the Great Lakes and the east and the southeast, but the eastern lakes is one area that's been dry, and that's us.
All right, buddy. Well, listen, we're going to be talking a lot more, I'm sure. And as you know, over the next couple of months, we're getting there. We're here. It is training camp time. So enjoy it and keep everybody updated, as I'm sure you will.
All right. So I look forward to it. And we'll keep an eye to the sky on Friday. Some feisty little storms may move through camp.
Okay. We'll definitely keep updated there and let us know if anything we need to pass along there. And we'll do that for you. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Sounds good. All right.
You got it. Take care. Yeah, I didn't talk with Pat about this because, you know, we didn't have enough time. But I will say, too, it's been a very, very inactive tropical season. I know we're only in, like, late July, but even by now, usually, you might have something out there. We haven't. I mean, a lot of times, hurricanes, when they actually form, aren't until August. I learned a little bit of this when I was in Florida for a while. They could be very early, too, but, like, Hurricane Andrew didn't hit until August, and that was right, many years ago. So you can have that. But I found it interesting that there hasn't been much in the tropics, like, at all through June and July. So you hope that's the case, you know, that you want to stay that way because these things can be devastating. But, you know, the weather out at training camp is going to be hot tomorrow to start, Thursday, I should say, to start. And then, as he said, maybe keep an eye out of the skies, maybe a storm or two rolling in. I don't think it's anything that should impact, like, you know, practice and going out there. If you have tickets, people have asked me about that, but I think we're okay there. But of course, stay updated. We'll let you know if anything changes as far as anything with practice and times and weather and all that here on WGR. WGR550.com as well. The Bills open training camp tomorrow. We'll come back. We'll wrap up your Northtown Extra Point Show. One more segment left before training camp officially begins tomorrow, the next time we talk. Okay, it's all here, folks. We're ready to rock and roll. It's training camp time. Let's go. Man, it's been a long time. Let's think about it. Season ended, and of course, it was very, very depressing once again, right? You have these off-season press conferences. We're hearing about all the different things that need to be done, things that need to do. Guys getting bigger and stronger. Guys are coming from injury. How are you going to improve the roster? Everybody's depressed about it. You're watching the Super Bowl. Ah, come on. Kansas City Chiefs, Philadelphia Eagles, they win it. Then it's the Senior Bowl. All right, well, you know, who are they looking at? Maybe going to draft one of these guys. We got a long way to go. That was January. Then the Combine happened at the end of February. Remember the Combine? It didn't seem that long ago. It's February. Then we get the free agency. Free agency opens up. Bills sign Joshua Palmer. They sign Joey Bosa mid-March. You're like, all right, see what they're doing here? That was March. Then it was the owners' meetings. We hear from Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott at the end of March. And then it was the opening of workouts. No coaches on the field. Then it was the draft. Remember the draft? Yeah, end of April. We have Brandon Bean comes on WGR. That was very noteworthy. We know that. Then we get to rookie minicamp. Then OTAs. Then minicamp. Then Sal went to Italy for about 10 days because we had 6 weeks off from football. And here we are. It all starts tomorrow. Tune in bright and early. Jeremy and Joe will be on site at St. John Fisher. I'll join them at 7 a.m. Sabres Live up next. One Bills Live after that. Chauvin the Bulldog at 3. I'll join them at 5 today. And I'll be talking with you from the field at St. John Fisher tomorrow as Derek and Zach take over the Extra Point Show during practice.